Blog Talk Radio.
I thank it for me.
Yes, I am.
Ring bang dana da, dang dana da.
Check it.
A revolution. Yeah. I'm on fight for revolution. Ring dang dana da, dang dana da. A revolution. Yeah. Rasta fight up that revolution. Dang dana da, dang dana da.
Check it.
Where people don't come out and them a make big speech, but poor people the food not reach. I man have to wonder how them really sleep. Them living in the pool while the poor are feel the heat. Red country, why it's red country, why? In the ghetto part of town you ain't nothing but a victim. We're just trapped in a political system. There ain't no one to say let alone. If you hit the big man a gunshot, them broke your bone with stone. Why? So a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution coming in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. A hot a revolution. Heads of government, what is your aim? Where is the plan? Where is the future for the younger generation? If there's no light at the end of the tunnel, well, young yourself, I go red like hell. For man, the peas are cooked, but the rice can't well. For no more big speech, time to come action. Crime and the violence rampant in our nation. People say it's because of separation. There's got to be a revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution, wriggling in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. Guns, knives and cutlass revolution. Dang da da dang, dang da da bang. All you false leaders, I brand you as traitors. Nothing but whoremongers, idol worshippers, them assassins. Yo, you better come down off of your pumpkin quite. Stop taking poor people for a joyride. Cause all your teeth is to divide and rule, and I use the people then with your political tools. Just fool. Sure. Cause a revolution, yeah. The poor boy to see the revolution. Ring dang da da ding, dang da da ding. A revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution. Ding da dang da dang da dang. No matter how them a come out and a skin off them teeth, yet the poor man the food not reach. Tell them all to practice what they preach. Cause I don't want to see them all a pagan preach. Whoa, cause a revolution, yeah. I'm on site for revolution. Ring dang da da dang da da. A revolution.
Only niggas allowed at this party.
A man of God.
It's my gangster shit, my
gentleman.
Gangster.
A man of
God. We all go good together.
Gangster.
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 Revolutionary for gangsters.
Grizzly.
I ain't scared of jail, I ain't scared to die. I was born a rider, you can see it in my eye. Always on some real shit, just like the homie fly. Ever since the age of five, I was always taught to ride. Told to sit, RPG, every day, all day. That's all we see. So beat the motherfucking culture, ride on vultures. Snitches get stitches, so they rarely approach us. It's a war going on, they try to keep it on the low. Now it ain't a reason to slip, I'm letting niggas know. It's psychological warfare, it's propaganda. So don't fuck with the news, cause they don't understand it. On Channel 5, all you see is black faces catching cases. They know that these fellas, the television is racist. But I'ma keep it G until I'm thugging the beat. Until they pour the libation of reference this new African nation.
And all these G's just afraid that I die. Stepping in next G just afraid that I die. Malcolm X and G just afraid that he die. And I'm a freaking G just afraid that I die. Just a weapon all these G's. I'm weapon in next G. Malcolm X and G just the day that he died. I'm a freaking G just the day that I die.
I'm not a lame, never was and never will be. I'm a G and I'ma bang till we get free. Initiated to the life at only 16. Red, black, and green, black power, it's a hood thing. A young king, soaking up game from the OGs, the big homies. Never forget what they showed me. Ride for the struggle, stay on top for your hustle. To survive in the jungle, take the mind and the muscle. I'm a rider, a soldier, a G, a man of character. An outlaw, a warrior, a rebel to America. Throwing up a set, black fist, rap around the sig, never been a snitch or a tom, forever fuck a pig. Do it for the people, give my life up gladly for the family. For freedom, all my G's understand me. Rather down my feet than live on my knees. And I'ma teach the same thing to my seed. Word between Zoe and Lil Zaire.
The day that I die, stepping in next G to the day that I die. Malcolm X and G to the day that he die. I'ma beat the G to the day that he die. I'll be G's up. I'm reppin' the next G to the day that I die. Malcolm was a G to the day that he died. So I'ma be a G till I die.
G is for general, like beef for vendetta. No one do it better. A G until a snitch get me set up to die. Similar to how they set up the eye. Just like COINTELPRO set up Machiavelli to die. So in the name of Bobby Hutton and Jonathan Jackson, I'ma keep mashing till they put a G in this cash. Riding for what I know is the truth. I keep the plane like Malcolm used to do. You confuse me, you straight ahead like Matulu said. Anticipated I'm dead, the same attitude getting me bridge. How could I turn on them? Too much I learned from them. These devils is hard, let's go ahead and put the burn on them. A G like a motherfucking gorilla. Yeah, the thing was cold, but inside my mind is thrilling. I paint a portrait of a killer and my sword is my pen. Get on a half a pint of hen and go and do it again.
I'll be G'd up, but I die. I'm repping the mix G'd up. Malcolm was a G to the day that he died. And I'ma be a G to the day that I die.
Cadillac, cool breeze in the 70s. southern thing alive.
You got that southern stuff I like.
You got that southern
it's
thing alive.
Like after school, feed and talk off of me to you. Barbecue, I'll even open the door for you. I know that's what you like.
I know just
you
what you like.
You got that southern stuff I like.
Miss Georgia Peach, Carolina, when you speak, the southern drawl makes me want to know you more. Do you want a big family? Well, if so, I can handle it. A gentleman, do the very best I can. Provide for you, I know you want to finish school. Intelligence is beauty. Girl, I want to be your study.
I know just what you like.
Know just what you like.
I know just what you need. Southern love and care. I know just what you want. I know just what you need.
What you need.
Southern loving girl.
Southern loving girl.
I can set you free.
I can set you free.
Oh,
I'm Greetings. Welcome to the Chef Rob Show. I was trying to wait for my people to call in and talk about Wadu. I guess they didn't get the memo. Things I like about Wadu. Been to a couple of meetings. And I'm very much interested. And I'd like for them to come on and let everybody else know what's going on. So I don't want to get too much ahead of it. I did want to read few things from Wadu, just like I put in the description of my show. excuse me. Wadu is the World African Diaspora Union. The World African Diaspora Union was initiated after the African American Intellectual Conference. Now, see, I'm going to stop there because I had got memos of that stuff a while back, and I just, I kind of ignored it. You know, I just like most new organizations, we do that shit, which is stupid. But I don't want to go too much into that. Oh, I think my call is on. That's cool. Let's see. Oh, he fell off. Come on, bud. Damn. Well, let me try to get this together because this is like a little bit confusing for me at the moment. Orienting me. So let me find another little track to play with. There's something interesting. What do we have here? Let's see.
Did you deny I'm on the bingy man? See the Rasta man, the bingy man, a chant chant. See the Naya man, the bingy man, a chant chant. See the Rasta man, the bingy man, a chant chant. Too much rude boy, they are rude. See the prison them overload. Too much rude boy, they are rude. See the prison them overload. I and I am on the bingy man, a chant chant. See the Rasta man, the bingy man, a chant chant. I and I am on the bingy man, a chant chant. See the rest of man, the bingy man, a chan chan. We like,
take a look, see how it's a bad. He say that the system not right.
Every day you find a couple dead body that get killed overnight. And the rich have it plenty, they enjoy their money while the poor in the ghetto, they have no penny. They work every day, low wage for their pay. The system never get better, it get worse every day. Still, I and I am on a chan chan. See the Rasta man, the bingy man, a chan chan. See the Naya man, the bingy man, a chan chan. I and I am on the bingy man, a chan chan.
Too much rude boy, they are
rude.
See the prison them overload. Too much rude boy, they are
rude.
See the prison them overload. Back with you, gun. Naya man, a chan, them down. Back with you, gun. Every day you run next, man down.
With a flattering lips, and a lying tongue. Implicating to the youth, said this and this ago come. Then I keep out your life, family are your wife. But there's no speech, no language, where the voice is not heard.
Chant them down, chant them down.
I and I am on a chant chant. See the Rasta man, the bingy man, a chant chant. See the Naya man, the bingy man, a chant chant. Zion, I am on the Rasta man, a chant, chant.
Take a look, see how I survive. She said that the system no right, right, right.
Every day you find a couple dead body that get killed overnight. And the rich have it plenty, they enjoy their money while the poor in the ghetto, they have no penny, they work every day, no wage for the pay. The system never gets better, it gets worse every day. Lord, I and I am on a chant chant. See the Rasta man, the dingy man, a chant chant. See the Naya man, the dingy man, a chant chant. See the Rasta man, the dingy man, a chant chant.
On Friday evening, go to any big city, and you'll see blacks lined up to get into Chinatown to go to eat some Chinese food. Have you ever seen Chinese lined up trying to get into a black town? Somebody is not playing with a full deck. You're not playing the game to win. You're just playing. And you got to stop spending your money. So then I go to various cities, and blacks got the nasty habit, when company comes, putting them in their car on a Sunday and taking them out to the white community and say, let me go out and show you some nice white homes. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Let's go out to look at the white malls. And then they come back home and say, how in the world can white folk afford all those fine homes and big houses? It's easy. It's your money. You see what I'm saying? And y'all think I'm teasing. See, they're living off of two incomes. They live off 100% of their income and 95% of yours. And you're trying to live off of 2%. It is humanly impossible for a race of people to live off of 2% of their income. And in America, you equate human worth based on what you own. And if black folk don't own 2%, that's why white racists say, black folk ain't worth 2 cents. Because we don't own anything, and human worth is equated in this country based on what you own and control. And we violate all the premises of economics. We have yet to learn how to practice group economics. And the last thing about integration is that integration got a quota system, and you need to know this. It's got a quota system. You're a white somebody against quotas, they're wrong. It got a quota system. Anytime you get more than 5 to 8% of blacks involved in anything, whites are going to put up chains. They're going to stop you. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks move into their community, they're going to put their houses up for sale. If more than 5% of blacks, 8% of blacks go into their schools, they're going to pull their kids out of school. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their businesses, they're going to move the business out of town, cross town, out of the country. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their association, they'll resign. They got a quota system. And people say, well, blacks are against affirmative action. No, they're not against affirmative action. They're against affirmative action for you. You see, they're against a set aside. Racism is nothing but preferential treatment for whites. They say they're against preferential treatment. You hear them say they're against set-asides. Jim Crow is nothing but a 100-year set-aside program for whites. So they set aside the best restaurants, the best food, the best schools for whites. They say they're against quotas. You got a quota system, I told you, in the immigration laws. Today, you still are a planned minority. You can't win. So now let me get to some solutions for you very quickly. I have a few more minutes I got left. What we're going to do across this country now is what we call Powernomics. That's a new book coming out called Powernomics, Unleashing Black American Potential. It's a follow-up to the book, Black Labor, White Wealth. It'll show you in very specific terms what you got to do to be competitive. The things we got to focus on is in broad categories with specific principles. The first is a community. You cannot do anything unless you have a community. Your community is your social cohesiveness. The only power, the potential that black people have in America is your social, racial cohesiveness. If you don't have that, you have no power. Forget about everything else. That's a fact of life. You got to have a community because the community will give you your businesses. It'll give you your sales opportunities and your markets. Now, how do you develop communities? The first thing you must do is stay out of all cross-purpose issues. Cross-purpose means horizontal issues. Don't get involved in any horizontal issues. Let me explain it to you. I see the puzzlements in your eyes. First, racism is vertical. Remember this. Racism is straight up and down. Racism means I don't care whether you are the lowest income black or the highest, the best educated or the least educated. It doesn't make any difference. You're all in the same tube. Okay? That's what Malcolm X asked. What is a black man with a PhD? Remember that saying? He answered, well, he's still a Negro. Okay? It means it doesn't make any difference. You're all in it together. That's straight up and down. Horizontal issues are any issue that pertains to everybody. Stay out of it. You're the weakest and poorest, most vulnerable people. Don't get involved in it. Because the only people that can benefit are those people who are directly behind where the horizontal crosses the vertical. Okay? The only people who benefit are where those two points cross. That's too small. You don't have that kind of energy and resources to waste. Now, what's a horizontal issue? Sexism is a horizontal issue. When you get into these various religious issues, that's a horizontal issue. Poverty is a horizontal issue. I keep telling some of my civil rights leaders, stay away from poverty. You cannot eradicate poverty. Poverty is a fix. It's a given. You're always going to have poor people. And people say, well, you're going to have poor Greeks, poor Indians, poor Lithuanians, poor Hungarians. Quit trying to eradicate poverty and try to get as many black folk as you out and leave poverty alone. But they try to eradicate something that can't be eradicated. Culturalism. That's a horizontal issue. And it pertains to everybody. Let me give you about sexism, for instance. I tell black women who always want to get into sex issues, they think that somehow that the issue is sex rather than racism. See, my great-grandmother was not enslaved because she was a woman. She was enslaved because she was black. Okay? And if you're going to get into sexism, I want black women to understand this, to keep your priorities in order. If I say abracadabra right now and sexism disappeared, you still can't go any place because you're black. And to keep it in order, remember what your mother felt. The minute she knew she was pregnant, she knew at that moment she was going to have what? A black child long before she knew the sex. So you keep your priorities straight and say, since my color came before my sex, I'm going to keep it in that order. You always say black first. So stay out of those cross-prepositions. I'll explain all the next time I come back out here on a Powernomics workshop or something. But that's very important. I can show you all the problems you got with that. And see, but once you stay out of those horizontal issues, like I tell some of my Muslim friends, I said, don't be worried about pushing Islamic faith. Push your skin color first and stay aligned with your people. And I tell them the people in the Baptist church, quit worrying about being a Baptist and worry about being black. And again, I have to give credit to your minister. It seems like he's one of the few in the country who understands that. That you put who you are and as a people before you start talking about what denomination you belong to. And especially since most of the denominations on the earth all work together to enslave black folk, all of them pimp and hustle black folk. The Catholics, the Protestants, the Baptists, the Jews, and everybody else got black folk. But what we're going to do then is start, once we get past building these communities, then we're going to start getting into what we call practicing, building alternative economics.
Hey, welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I kind of missed something really quick. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this group called Wadu, but I wanted them to go ahead and speak more on it because I don't want to go ahead and basically sound like an idiot. I don't like that. Hey, sister, how you feeling?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Well, I don't really want to go ahead and go into that, Wadu. I'm all right. I'm all right. Because, I've been going to their meetings and stuff, and I like what I'm hearing. I really,
yeah.
Really do. And so I wanted them to go ahead and speak on it, and I was waiting for the sister who's here to help organize it go ahead and come on through. But, I think they've stood me up. I feel like an ugly person waiting all day. And I was told, hey, I'm going to come and get you, baby. I'm going to come and get you.
Oh.
I'm still looking out the window and...
Well, things happen, right? Things happen. That's the way you got to see it. So it could be anything could have happened. So I guess you just can't speculate that it's necessarily...
You cleaning it up. I'm going to stop you now.
No, I'm just saying, anything could have happened. So
I know. I'm just joking.
It's
cool.
I like the little speech that was just you just played because I think that's quite interesting. I think that whole point about economics and who holds power through economics is an important one. In the 80s, I used to go to some of the Black Panther meetings in the UK, and it's a similar kind of vision to kind of see more stronger support for community by community. So, that we embrace our community and we economically support each other to be more successful. And we kind of keep the money within the community instead of putting it out to other communities and making them strong through our money, our economic support. So I really hear that. I think it's like it's an old story, the new package. The problem you have is buying, right? So due to the fact that so many people are so bought off by the system, by the in the world that we live in, by the power brokers, as it were, everybody's aspiring to what they see. It's very hard to bring people back to a position of community and serving your own community. And who is community now has really changed so much because community has become those people that may be in your field. Look at something like Blog Talk, right? So community within Blog Talk, maybe those people who are successfully producing shows and, are getting listeners in. And they may not necessarily be black. They will be people who are just putting it out on a daily basis and doing their thing, and coming up with great topics of conversation. And so people then, who may be of black skin, who are in that, that chain and that link will probably, listen to all sorts and connect with all sorts of people, not necessarily on the basis of colour, but just on the basis of what you're producing and how effective you are within that link, yeah? So I think the problem is that we don't necessarily define our success by colour. We define connections by, what people are putting out, and that's probably where the disconnection comes in terms of the message that's coming from that organization, that you have to get the buy-in at the ground level. And but
right.
I absolutely agree with them that they need to be, you know, there needs to be more conversation in the churches. There needs to be more conversations, in businesses, with people who own businesses, with people who own houses, you know, just generally people need to be having more of that conversation about how important it is economics. I don't know. I think it's interesting, and I think it's a good conversation to have. I just don't know how doable, because so many of us have been bought off in so many different ways, you know, how we spend our money. You know, it's true, how we spend our money and whatever is no longer a race thing. It really is just about what we want and how we see ourselves, and it's a difficult one.
You know, Poppy always talked about the house niggas. I love the conversation. Let me play you one of America's ultimate house niggas. Okay, this dude is like, I don't know if he's running for emperor of house niggers or president or just I don't know. He's trying to go ahead and be top. So listen to this guy. This is Jesse Lee Peterson. Reverend.
Okay.
Jesse.
And we have a special Out in the Open panel tonight. They'll be with us throughout the hour to talk about self-segregation. Molly Secour, who writes a column on race relations for blackcommentator.com. CNN contributor Roland Martin. Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, founder and president of...
You know, that wasn't the one. Let me play this other one first. I was trying to set it up for you. I want you to hear what he got to say first. Okay, well, this part you really believe. Oh.
No, I've often said that thank God for slavery, because, you know, had not, then the blacks who are here would have been stuck in Africa. And you see how bad Africa, everybody and mama trying to get out of Africa and come to America.
Mm-hmm.
And so God has a way of looking out for folks, and he made it possible by way of slavery to get black folks into this country. But 100% American. Proud of it. I thank God that he saw fit for me to get here. Never mind that, you know, we were sold. I mean, my ancestor way back, way yonder when, were sold by Arabs and blacks to white folks and got us here. The white man came and brought us to the greatest country in the world. The ride over was pretty tough. But, you know, it's like riding on a crowded airplane, and when you're not in first class, it's a tough ride. But you're happy when you get to your destination. And so the ride was tough over here. The pain for freedom was tough, you know, because in life, if you want to gain something, you got to lose something. No pain, no gain. So it was a tough. The pain was tough, all for the sake of freedom. So I thank God that he got me here, and to show my appreciation to the blacks who suffered as a result of coming here, and the Arabs and blacks who sold us to the white man for going there and getting us and bringing us here, I want to say thanks.
Are we still on, sister?
Yeah. Wow, that was mad. Oh, that was so mad. You know, maybe he echoes the thoughts of somebody out there. I don't know who. And we have a
special Out in the Open panel tonight. They'll be with us throughout the hour to talk about self-segregation. Molly Secour, who writes a column on race relations for blackcommentator.com. CNN contributor Roland Martin. Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, founder and president of Brotherhood Organization for a New Destiny. And James Edwards, host of the Political Cesspool on WRL-MAM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome all.
Thank you. Good to be here, Paula.
One of the most striking things about talking to these kids is the extent to which they downplayed the issue of race and why it is all the white kids sat together, the black kids and Hispanics. Do you buy that?
I don't. You know, a lot of white Americans are afraid to talk about race and morality concerning Black Americans.
But I was talking to Black kids too. Yeah, they said the same thing. They said, we want to be around kids that have something in common with us. We're in schoolrooms with them all day long. Lunches are, you know, the bit of time that we have to relax.
People tend to be comfortable with folks that they know. But when it comes to the white and black issue, most Black Americans are racist and resentful of white Americans, and so they don't feel comfortable around white Americans. And instead of facing their racism, they say, well, it's the white man. White people are racist toward us, and white folks are fed up. They are afraid to speak up for fear of being called racist. They are now afraid to hang around with Black Americans because fear of saying the wrong thing.
So you're telling me these kids at this school in this racially diverse city are all racist? Black kids?
I'm not saying that they all are, but I am saying that most blacks are today, and we haven't dealt with the issue of racism from Black Americans toward white folks because blacks have been told that they can't be a racist by their quote-unquote leaders. And so racism within the hearts and minds of black folks concerning white Americans have not been dealt with.
All right. Do you not like me? Do you not like James? Do you not like white people, Roland Martin?
First of all, the nonsense that Reverend Peterson is spewing is ridiculous. Here's the reality. Folks live in areas where they live, so they go to school. You have an understanding of where you're simply from. I went to Texas A&M, and it was interesting when students from large cities would sit with students from large cities. Students from rural towns would sit with students from rural towns. Texas A&M is 86% white.
Right.
I was a student there. That is the reality. Now, the issue is what happens when you only stay in that particular area. I don't buy this nonsense that they're racist. People are simply comfortable based upon circumstance, based upon where they're from, based upon culture, based upon knowledge. That's what it boils down to.
Roland is in denial, Paula. Let me say, Roland is in denial. I wrote an article for worldnetdaily.com looking for one strong white man, a white man that would speak up. And I received truckloads of emails from white Americans who said that I am afraid to deal with black folks for fear of being called a racist. I got it from preachers and non-preachers alike.
James.
Paula, Reverend Peterson's absolutely right. As a white American, I think that what's portrayed throughout the controlled media is that self-segregation is something that we should apologize for, when in fact the exact opposite is true. I think it is perfectly natural and healthy that one would choose to associate with members of their own families, people with whom they share the same values and traditions and heroes. There's nothing enriching for white school children to be bussed across town to gang-ridden schools in which they have to walk through metal detectors before they can report the class.
This is a racially diverse school. I mean, we're talking about a school that actually where they got rid of segregation years and years ago by federal mandate.
The idea of white people are afraid to be called racist, first of all, we need to get over this whole thing of, am I a racist, am I not? The answer is yes. You cannot grow up in America and not be racist if you are white.
Are you saying white people are racist?
I'm saying all white people start off being racist.
That's
insanity.
You cannot.
See,
that's the type of stuff
you cannot grow up in this culture without being racist. Once you accept the fact that you have an inherited it, it's in the air.
So do you agree with me that most blacks are racist
to all
whites?
By the time I die, I will be less racist. But it's only to the degree that I work against being racist.
But what about the Reverend's point that he feels that the blacks are more racist towards whites than whites
racism
towards blacks?
Racism equals prejudice plus power. Blacks in this country do not have power. They do not
You don't have to have power to be a racist.
You have to have power.
Conservatives are discriminated against by liberal blacks, like this guy here. They're called Uncle Tom.
All right, hang on, James, you get the last word, and then we'll come back to all of you. James, you get the last word, then you all get to chime in after the break.
Only liberal demagogues believe that human nature can be carried away on an integrated school bus. There's nothing wrong with European Americans standing up for their culture and their traditions, and you want that for minorities, but we want it for ourselves. And I think many white Americans are seeing through this charade, and I'm one of them that's beginning to speak out against it.
Do you consider yourself a racist?
No, I consider myself a man who's proud of his cultural heritage.
All right, we're going to take a short break. Hold your thoughts, hold your fire. We've got a lot more to discuss.
All right, welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob. We have Ebony and Prince on the line.
Hi.
How you doing, sister?
I'm good.
I wonder, real quick, that first part, see, I got cut off.
Yeah.
Blog Talk's just welcoming me back. I thank you. Really, I really thank you for doing that. Yeah. That first part of the clip when he was thanking the white man for slavery, you know, it's so much that stood out with that, but the part that, I don't know which part is worse, but the part right now is bothering me is the part he's talking about the tough ride. It's sort of like being in, you know, not in first class. I mean, like, wait a minute, they still give you drinks and let you go to the bathroom and you ain't changing no. What the fuck was he talking about?
Well, you know what? Wow, what do you say? I mean, that if that's not a slave mentality, I don't know what is. Like, he's well and truly still a proper slave, sold out big time. I don't know if I want to even call him a house nigger. I just think, you know, he's done, he's finished, he's lost the plot. And you know what? There are a lot of people who will give themselves excuses for where they are right now and want to buy out so far to the system, to the host system, to the power brokers, I call them, you know, because, you know, racism is about power. It is about power, your ability to have power and use that power against someone else. And I absolutely agree, it's prejudice plus power. It definitely is. But, you know, the difficulty is when you find your Black people who are now trying to say we are the same, we have that ability to be racist, we our experiences in getting to the Caribbean, because my parents are from the Caribbean, getting to the Caribbean through slavery or getting to America through slavery was all like, you know, a great trip and thank God for freedom. Really, really, really. It's just mad. I don't even think I really want to comment on such a idiotic kind of mental. I don't even call it. I don't know if it's good enough to even say he's an idiot because he's a powerful idiot because he's using the media to propagate something that is so untrue. But some people out there will want to believe it, and that's a sad thing because that's almost spitting on your ancestors and kicking dust into their eyes in the grave, you know, for the experience that they've been through and the experience we're all still suffering. Because I think what people forget is that the reason why we are so powerless right now is part of that experience. It's not just the fact that, you know, we were enslaved. It's the mental stuff that we've had to undo. You know, it's taken maybe so equally or four or five times as long for people to become free in their minds, and a lot of us still aren't there, right? And that's what's holding us back. And that's probably the reason why you need an organization like the one you're highlighting tonight to kind of ask people to open their minds up to a different way of thinking, to go back to basics almost and see where you're coming from and what you bring and how you can free yourself from something around you that seems so comfortable but is so wrong.
Brother, that makes a lot of sense. Sorry about that. Brother Pionk, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, brother?
I'm going to stop coming to your show. You don't have nothing to eat, nothing to drink.
Well, brother, you know what? I'm not even going to laugh at that because I'm actually changing that. I'm going to be doing, putting this up a little bit more. I got access to a nice cafe. So we're going to take this into the bottom of the cafe. It was a nice little area there. And we're going to run this show from there and put it on a whole lot of other stuff. So I'll be, hopefully, I think we'll start doing that about the 11th.
But, you know, Jesse Lee Peterson is is an opportunist.
Because I wanted you to go ahead and check. That's what I was leading up to. Because one thing I want. Because you don't mind if I tell everybody. You just got back from Africa, right?
Yeah, I've been gone for the last 6 weeks.
And so, you know, what is how much of the stuff? Because you know what he's leading to. That Africa's such a terrible place. So, is he anyway correct in his thinking?
I went there and got married.
Oh, congratulations.
Congratulations.
I don't see it being no terrible thing in place else. A lot of opportunities there that we're not taking advantage of, which we should. But I am. I don't know about everybody else. But here's the point with Jesse Lee Priest. And like I said, he's an opportunist. And the way they use this word racism today, racism is not what it today, what it was back in the 50s and 60s. Racism didn't have nothing to do about somebody liking you or not liking you. Racism was an economic issue when blacks was prevented from having access to what it was that they sought in order to enrich themselves and to make themselves wealthier and make themselves better off. They were denied it. It had nothing to do about I like you or don't like you. And the simple reason, when I grew up, there was no whites in our neighborhood. But when we wanted jobs, we had to go to them to get jobs, and, you know, we was denied and so on and so on. What they talking about today, like the one white woman mentioned, asked a question about, do you like me? They're talking about discrimination and prejudice. Some discrimination and prejudice is actually good.
What's good?
Animals practice it out all the time. You never see squirrels take nuts to the pigeon nest, do you? So is that not discrimination and prejudice? Blacks had the opportunity. They would hire their cousins and their nephews before they would hire somebody else. I'm prejudiced in who I would marry. So come
Ooh.
On. So it's some prejudice and discrimination is good as long as you don't violate somebody's civil rights as the laws are stated within the United States.
Okay. Brother Kometu, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. What's up, Pionki? Chef Rob?
How you
Stay
doing?
Here,
huh?
Sister on the line, too. Just Ebony Empress.
Hi.
What's up, sister?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
What do you have to say about what you know, that little piece there, including what Brother Pionki just said?
I only came in on what he said, and, you know, I agree with that point that some discrimination is productive and it's the law of nature.
Mm. Let me go back to playing the rest of that little clip with Jesse Lee Peterson. I want y'all to comment on this. Hold on.
I don't think that that's what most people intended when they moved out here, that this would become a segregated community. I think that, I'm talking about it, African Americans moved into communities like Lithonia in the hopes that they would be welcome. It simply didn't happen. As African Americans began to move into Lithonia and Southeast DeKalb County, white people began to move out.
We continue our special hour now, Divided We Stand, Self-Segregation in America. That minister we just heard is talking about an affluent and largely black suburb just east of Atlanta, but it could be anywhere in America. Let's go back to our Out in the Open panel now. Molly Secor and Roland Martin, who think that self-segregation is natural, not always a reflection of racism. Also with us tonight, Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, who says blacks are often responsible for self-segregation and victimization, and James Edwards, who is a white separatist. Welcome back. Now, you have been highly critical of African Americans. You think a lot of crime and poverty follows where they are. Take a look at that community.
Well, look.
Is that a place where you could live?
No, it absolutely does follow them, and you know that it does. And I think CNN outdid themselves in finding the strong, affluent black community, because that is certainly the exception and not the rule. 9 times out of 10, integration is a one-way street that runs directly through white neighborhoods. And I think that we've seen that throughout the last 40 years as the failed civil rights movement has manifested itself in our daily lives.
You know what, Paul, let me make something very clear. It is offensive for him to project this level of ignorance on national television. First and foremost, have you even been there? You understand the community? You haven't.
I've lived amongst your people.
But you have to know.
Absolutely.
Watch your people. That's Ross Perot. Here's the whole deal with this community. You're dealing with African-Americans of a particular income level, okay? So when you talk about self-segregation, it's not just based upon race. the piece laid out this whole issue of race, but it's also based upon income.
You know what the minister said? He said very clearly, we fight disrespect almost everywhere. We don't have to be white in this community.
And people who live in that neighborhood also talked about when they lived in affluent white neighborhoods, when they walked their kids down the street, people perceived them as being the nanny, and they said they got sick and tired of that level of injustice. So they said, wait a minute, I don't want to have to sit here and spend $1 million on a home and somebody think I'm a nanny. That's offensive.
We have several dynamics going on in Atlanta. Out of Los Angeles, for example, many blacks are moving back to Atlanta because of the illegal alien situation in Atlanta. They're running blacks out of their community. Also, blacks are separating themselves because of their own hatred or resentment toward white folks. They don't feel comfortable, and instead of looking at that, they're blaming white folks.
They're moving to Lithonia because they don't like white folks? One white family,
and you heard the lady say that she was afraid to move in. Because we are so separated, thanks to the so-called civil rights movement, the blacks and whites are so separated, we haven't really got to know each other.
They're separated because of the civil rights movement? Could they be separated because of what
Jesse
happened
Jackson
before?
Hold on, Roland. Belmead is a community in Nashville, very affluent community, 99.9% white, I would say. I have never heard of anyone saying this area is self-segregated. This is where white people live. This is where affluent white people. But no, we deconstruct a neighborhood in Georgia because affluent black people are there, and we're calling it self-segregation. We don't call that self-segregation in Belmead, where white people are there.
Does that have something to do with populations you're talking about, whites being the majority population?
Why do we deconstruct black people? Why do we put them under a microscope and say, my goodness, look at these people. They would like to have a nice life.
Let me also give you a quick
It's
a critical fact.
New Birth
Missionary Baptist Church is run by Bishop Eddie Long. That church now is 9% Hispanic. They now have a Hispanic worship service. What you're seeing is Lithonia is becoming a diverse. That church, 25,000 members, right there in Lithonia. That is a reality. It's a reality.
I want to just disagree with one thing that he said. You know, crime does follow blacks who don't have two parents in the homes. Crime and violence and lack of moral character, right?
So white folks don't commit crimes, right?
But where there are two parents, but where there are two parents, you don't tend to find out-of-control crime.
You're talking about self-segregation. Stable family.
Talking about self-segregation, but forced integration is not a path to equality. It's a march towards totalitarianism. And all of these liberal talking heads that want to crow about the wonders of diversity, spend a week on the mean streets of South Memphis and you'll graduate with a degree in race relations.
Wow.
Hold your thoughts.
I guess your neighborhood is really safe, huh?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, right.
Oh, boy.
Hang on. Gotcha.
Stay with me. The conversation, I promise, will continue on the other side. Save it.
I'm sorry.
There's still some time to let us know what you all think. Go to...
Hey, welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob. It was something in that Jesse Lee Peterson when he started running his mouth. Everybody there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yep.
Hey, Jesse, to me, he was mixing things. He was, you know, and does feed into that thing you were saying, Brother Pianchi, that he is an opportunist. He was mixing the issues in the beginning. Did y'all hear that?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. I myself agree with the who they call the white separatists.
Who are the white separatists?
Yeah,
and you know, I've been trying to name that city Lithonia, Georgia, and he's absolutely right. I have seen one documentary done on that city where a realtor was talking about the city, and he actually said that a black woman wanted to move there because it was all black. So people have a right to live wherever they want to in this country. And I keep going back to the Constitution, Brother Kemet knew, and let it work the way it wants to. It's going to form, you're going to have what they call segregated enclaves. And there's nothing wrong with that. Matter of fact, I think it's not. I like Lithuania. I think it should be more like that. And I hope it's successful. As long as blacks control the economy in that community and don't let the Jews move in like I understand they're trying to do. And not move in to live, but move in to control the businesses. Let me clarify this.
There we go.
Yeah, I think that's a nice little spot over there, and that should be the model. You know, another example of how we should be living. Y'all agree with that?
Yeah.
Hello? We still on? Because I'm having some
issues. Yeah, we're still here. I don't know enough about your American cities to really comment, so.
I wish I'd open my chat room back up. I'm having some problems with my switchboard, people. Let me.
But you know, down in the Caribbean, well, not the Caribbean, but down, of course, in like Rio and parts of Brazil, it's more notorious than what it is in the United States, but it goes on in a more subtle way in that area.
You know what I heard today? I think it was Colombia. That most of the darker skinned people, you know, most of the blacks is down there, living along the coast,
mm-hmm.
and they fall over there, so they're about to kick them all out. Did y'all hear about that?
No,
that's been happening since the Spanish took over.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I'm talking about this happening today. I know that happened. Historically, but you know, this happening today, and they've been sending out hit squads to get rid of these people.
Wow!
But, and I don't think it's any different in tactics because the caste system set up by Catholic white Christians has always been that way in Spanish-speaking countries. And if you go around Veracruz and Belize and different areas, the blacks are always pushed to the coast.
Mm.
That's not new. I don't think it's new at all. Even with his father.
I didn't notice that when I went out there. I didn't really notice that. I think, you're right.
You know, I know that's true because I live in a so-called used-to-be black area in Denver called Montbello. And now it's like, 60% Hispanic. And it was all black before. And then the mixed couple started coming in, then the Mexicans started coming in. And so anywhere we are where the Mexicans are, their Catholic caste system upbringing on color, it's a color caste system. It's not just a caste system socially. It's a color caste system. And even within their own ranks, if you mix with a dark-skinned person or if you have a dark-skinned, that one catches hell in a Spanish family, in a Hispanic family. And so as a person who's worked in mental health with our teenagers, I've seen a lot of that the whole time. I mean, that's nothing new.
Yeah, you know, that comes out of Mohawk Conference that was held in the 1800s, later 1800s, where it was dealing with the Negro problem. And Brazil chose to do it, South America chose to do it through assimilation. And discrimination, whereas the United States chose to do it through discrimination and Jim Crowism. And that's the way it is today.
Same tactic in a lot of different places.
And I would just say the Catholic Hispanic social order, the caste system, color system, it doesn't really allow for integration. They tip and sleep with our women, and our men, you know, sneak and sleep with their women, and they have children, but it's never been socially acceptable. And through the church practices, the quinceañeras, the ceremonies, the christening, all of the cultural parts of their orientation, their religious orientation, that keeps a control over the community. And incidentally, you know, Mexico had a sizable black population when it formed and rebelled against New Spain back in 1821. And their first president was Morales, and he was kind of like a Mexican Hispanic, a lighter Hispanic. And then the second president was Vicente Guerrero, who actually was a black Indian.
he was mixed with African and Indian. And
I went to the area,
you know,
I've been down to the area he was born in. I've been to Guerrero.
Right.
The state
he has a province called Guerrero, Mexico, or a county.
It's a city, but they got a lot of shit on them about that. But what I did notice, they didn't really have that true skin color in a lot of spots. They had them real light skin.
Right.
Almost
and
white.
You can look them up on Google. You'll see five different shades of them on their pictures that they captured. The issue has been, though, that if you talk to a Mexican in the United States, they either play like they don't know, or because of, you know, their hatred toward dark-skinned people and Moors for ruling Spain for 800 years.
Hold on, brother. What I found with talking to a lot of them is that they were just told, hey, they were never taught that. They were just never taught that in school. A lot of them think that they got that skin color from the Indians.
Well, I think they did. Well, you know, also, Kevin, now Spain invaded and had dominance over Mexicans. Mexicans more or less, and you know more about that than I do because I don't study it, but I got a friend of mine who's a Mexican, a very good close friend. But Mexicans more or less go back to the indigenous Indian Native population that comes out of that country more so than the Spanish. And, you know, Spanish was a lousy dominant.
I find that interesting that you say that because in reality, they don't go back there. They say they do. They try to. But what my point is they deny that there was a sizable black population before the Spanish got there. That's the part they don't seem to remember.
Yeah, that is. Like I said, they only talk about I got my skin color from the Indians. That's all they say.
Right.
And that's
part of the Catholic sensibility, the Christian sensibility that they adopted from the Spanish. And don't get it wrong, people. The so-called people called Indians in the United States and Mexico and Canada who claim to be Indian are not the original people of that land, and they are very very racially aware and prejudiced against darker-skinned people without Spanish admixture.
Well, you know, when you go down to Veracruz, what's the giant head called? Yeah, at that museum, there is a plaque there that gives credence to their African origins. And I got a picture.
Yeah, and
Have you ever read that?
Someone told me that they removed that plaque. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, I got a picture of it, so it was once there.
And it was there for a while. And someone took a trip back there after they initially took a picture of it, and they had removed it, just like they do when they remove the black-looking statues in Egypt from Cairo. They put them in the back room. But my point being, go ahead. I was just going to say that the point that I'm making is that the black population in Mexico and Central America was there from prehistoric times. And that's the part that all of them deny, including the Indians. Even though you got monuments at, Chaco Canyon here in Arizona, you got monuments in Monte Alban, which is on the west coast of southern Central America. You have
Arizona. It found some more stuff in Arizona. I can't remember where I saw that article. It found some more articles over there in Arizona. You also have the Diagon in
southern Colorado at the Aztec ruins. So, you know, we've been here for a long, long, long time.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something else. We like to make relevance of what they found. But one of these days, they're going to find evidence of blacks in 2012, too.
Hey, let me finish playing. Listen to the last part of this.
Back to our panel now, Molly Shakur, Roland Martin, Reverend Jesse Lee Patterson, Peterson, and James Edwards. So what is it, Roland, that whites don't get about the black church experience?
Well, it's not a question of that. The bottom line is...
We're not packing the churches with you side by side.
But here's the reality. Our churches come from our neighborhoods. Our neighborhoods typically are segregated, and that's the reality of it. Also, different worship experiences, and that's what you have there. You do have people who don't want to be honest about celebrating one God, but they want to be separate because they have different perspectives when it comes to worship.
Molly?
And why would we worship together? I mean, historically, we have to, the self-segregation topic, we have to look historically on what this is about and how it got to be this way. Whites have always driven self-segregation. And historically, African people had to hide their religion, their spirituality when they came here. So there's always been that separation, and there was safety in segregation for when what you're calling self-segregation. That's about safety.
Right.
That's about protection.
We want to hear what you have to think about this. We asked you our quick vote question. Is self-segregation bad for race relations in the U.S.? 46% of you said yes. 37% said no. 17% says doesn't matter. We should make it clear the results are not scientific. What do you make of those results?
Well, I don't know what to make of the results. I mean, obviously the people who tune in to CNN probably wouldn't be of a conservative persuasion for the most part. But getting back to the churches, as a Christian...
Man, you fight.
Well, it's not that we measure that by our...
Listen, as a Christian, I've always been under the impression that it was the role of the church to bring people into the acceptance of Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, not to preach the failed social gospel of cultural Marxism. And I reject the term segregationist. I reject the term separatist. I'm a man who is proud of his ethnicity. Is Mr. Martin a black separatist because he's proud of his race?
No, I'm not a black separatist. I am a Christian. And what I understand during Holy Week is that you cannot stand here as a so-called Christian and talking about walking in the footsteps of Jesus and dare say you are a separatist. That is absolutely against...
I didn't say it.
That is absolutely against what Jesus stood for.
Thank you.
Billy Graham was the first to say that the churches are separated on Sundays between black and white. Well, white Americans need to understand that things are not going to change until they get over this false guilt that they have about the condition or concerning the conditions of black folks. They're going to have to get over the fear.
You're saying we white people feel tremendous guilt?
Right,
and
false guilt.
You're not up on fostering better relationships between blacks and whites?
It's not your fault. So whites have to get over the fear. Whites must get over that fear and start standing up and defending themselves.
Before we get to what happens, we've gotten a lot of email, and a lot of folks are really mad at you tonight, Molly, so I want you to respond to this one. They say, Elizabeth, I take great exception with the woman on your show. I hope they mean you, not me. Yeah, this is you that said this. That said, if you are white, you are born racist. I think it is ignorant to think that everyone white is born racist, and I think it perpetuates the problems that we have with racism.
I said you cannot be raised in this country and not be racist. That's what I'm saying is we are raised as racist.
But Mother,
Are you saying that you, a white woman, are racist? Can I finish one sentence? So if you grow up in this culture, this is a white supremacist society. We were founded on white supremacist principles. The founding fathers had slaves. We have not gotten...
We're not living in the 1800s
anymore. Well, okay, look at the criminal justice system. Why is it that 70% of the jail space is taken up by... African-American.
Because
and
they are committing crimes.
Of the population.
They are committing crimes. They don't have attorneys to get them out of jail.
Okay, final word.
The personal insult is the last recourse in an exhausted mind. Only European-Americans are called racist for wanting to look after their cultural interests.
Final word from you, quick one.
To change this, you have to have black pastors and white pastors actually discuss what James Meeks is doing in Chicago. With Salem Baptist Church in Willow Creek, they are getting together with the congregation and saying, this is how we break down racism.
You've been looking at
for 400 years, and I think it's time that we take a look at
you need to get over your racism.
I don't think it's all our past. We'll be trying to break this down.
Oh, it's so hard to cut off a reverend, but I have to. Someone's got to pay for this.
Are you sure he's a reverend? Check the paper.
Yeah, he is.
Are you sure?
All right, we'll be right back. Thank you, team.
Welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. That was an interesting piece there.
You know, I never have invited to those type of discussions because when they mentioned Billy Graham, I would have quoted this, said by Billy Graham. He said, Stephen, if it weren't for you wretched Britishers, we wouldn't have any Negroes in this country anyway. We wouldn't have this mess. This was said to Billy by Billy Graham to Stephen Oxford in 1940.
And what's interesting about that is he's wrong, because we was here before they got here.
So okay, so what okay, Pianca, and you, what does he mean by that? We wouldn't have any Negroes here. Is that good or bad? What is he trying to say?
Oh, well, he's talking about the problems that was resulted around the 1940s, I guess, coming out of the 1920s and so on, so on, so on.
What problems were those?
The problems with the integration of the military as Truman and so on, so on, so on. So there's a lot of problems going on in cities in the 1940s. And you had race riots that was going on in some of your northern cities. And, you know, it's just, it don't bother me because I don't, you know, I'm going to tell you something else. If you see how you go in your airports today and you starting to see signage in the Chinese language.
Oh, yeah. You see them in all kinds of languages.
See, that's downtown L.A., too.
That is an indication of power.
Yep.
And as long as black people are the economic whipping stone, whipping childs of this nation, everybody's going to take advantage of them. Mexicans call blacks stupid. Not because of their intellectual, because of their economic. Because Mexicans go into black communities and take and do everything. And they say, well, this is, you know, and people would be hesitant to do something like that, which they were. They probably were. But they say, hey, they let us come in here and do this. We might as well come on in and force. So as long as blacks continue to be in the economic condition that they're in, and the prostitution of their markets the way they do, nobody's going to respect us.
Man, you know what you what? Because where my grandmother lives, she lives in Englewood, Illinois. Englewood is a little town, little area there in Chicago. Englewood, they have the highest amount of shit, a lot of killing in that area. That area is a lot of shootings, a lot of murders. And my grandmother still lives in that area, right? And she lives like in the middle of the block. And then there's a vacant lot. Then the next door is a Mexican family who's been there for about 2 years. Across the street from them, another Mexican family is moving in. And that area, like, has been all black for a long time. It's been all black for years. And now I see them coming there. They move there. There's another little place down the street. I see them moving. Man, you're right. They come in and force. And the family live across the next door to my grandmother. And it's a nice big house, but it's a bunch of folks I see over there, man. We ain't paying attention to none of that.
Well,
I mean, I'm not saying don't hate on these people. I mean, shit, you know, they just doing what's coming natural to them. You know, and we not paying attention to that.
Does it matter how many people move in? Isn't it about the minds of the people who live there, right? So, you know, you're going to have people move into different areas all the time. You know, that's how it is.
But they move in, and look, it is about the minds. It is about the minds.
Yeah.
On that street, it's like five houses on that street, because there's a couple of vacant lots. But it's like, I think it's like maybe like 12 houses on each side of the street, I think. So their house, my grandparents' house, and a couple other houses, and that house across the street are the only houses on the house, on the only houses on the properties on that block that look decent. The rest of them look fucked up.
Well, you know another thing, too. Where Brother Kim McNeil stay there in Colorado, if you look, trace the history of those blacks, a lot of them, they came out of California. South Central used to be controlled by blacks, but not anymore. And another point, like that discussion that you were playing along the lines with Jesse Peterson, we always blaming white folks. But hell, Chinese don't like blacks. The Chinese don't buy anything from black people. Come on,
okay,
now.
But,
okay, Pianca, but I don't say go ahead and blame. I mean, I say blame white folks, but use that to go ahead and to make it work to your advantage.
And
I mean, our problems are white folks. We got a lot of blacks out here doing fucked up shit. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, a lot of our problems are white folks. Because we're here.
I would take it further.
our problem is the white folks in us. We have
absorbed so much bullshit that
we think like them, and we become destructive to our own causes because we will not feed from a consciousness outside of any other race.
And that's true. And, you know, I was going to mention, too, we have areas here in my city that's, for instance, an Italian neighborhood. Well, when houses come up for vacant, they don't put signs on the yard. It's word of mouth.
No, no.
Somebody comes, moves into that area.
I hear they put Hispanic signs on the yard, so niggas can't even read it.
Well, you mean in Spanish language. But, no, we got areas here that when these ethnic groups, you got the German area, and of course the German area has been destroyed, but you got some Polish areas and, like I said, the Italian, the hill. When they was running the highway through, they didn't want any they wanted the highway to separate their side from the other side. They didn't want no streets to cut through. And that's the way they were, and they got what they wanted.
So you know that point you made about the point about Chinese not buying from blacks? Well, blacks don't buy from blacks. That's a bottom line. In the UK, that's the issue we have, that, you know, black businesses are not supported by black people. I don't know how it is, but in the US so much. But here, you know, black businesses struggle because we don't support our own. We would rather go and buy from Asians or other people, or Chinese or other people down the street, but we're not going to buy from our own because we regard it as, you know, a lower standard, more expensive.
You know what? You know, one of the problems I see, like when we sell like merchandise, I'll just stick with that, like clothing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
A lot of times we buy it from the Chinese anyway.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, so you know, we're not. I always say that we need to get control of the raw materials. You know, and that's more of our problem. We don't.
And see, this is a circular issue. You can't get away from the conditioning of the colonial mindset of all black folks over the planet. And I know in the UK they have pockets of consciousness where people struggle against the colonizing mentality. But I also know too that you have a lot of people, like in Chicago, like in New York, like in California, where blacks are running to get away from being black.
They are, yeah. They are. As far as
well, you know, they're running, they're sprinting.
They are.
Well, you know, Asians, blacks trying to have a business that they want blacks to patronize, and the goods that they're selling, they're going to Asian wholesalers trying to get the same price that the Asians would give to their cousins who's already
have. Exactly. That's my point.
Asians are never going to give you family prices. They're not going to do that.
No.
See,
I think what the issue is we're never starting from a level playing field.
No.
Because we only deal with, in our conversation usually, not this one particularly, but we only usually deal with the surface consciousness that we've inherited from the abuse. We rarely, economically or socially, as a group, deal with the real issues we're facing. We continue to be on this integration binge, where at least I'm not as bad as such and such, and I'm as equal to white folks as any other people. You know, I grew up in Joliet, Illinois, right outside of Chicago, and my grandmother actually inherited land from her father, and so we lived on the hill in Lockport, where all the Negroes, the criminal Negroes, live down in the valley near the prison. So I come from a family who was hoity-toity, better than thou. And a lot of them are still that way. And so I have an insight, particularly in my black community out of Illinois, into this this white bullshit-ass mentality that we just cannot seem to break. And I've gone across the country. I've lived in other places, been to Florida, D.C., California, here. And what I find is we love other people so much that to even consider our own is like trying to speak Cantonese and you ain't never spoke to a Cantonese speaker.
Yeah, it's true. It's like when you go into the workplace. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you. Go on, keep going.
Go ahead, sir.
I was just saying it's like when you go into the workplace, okay, and you come across your fellow black person working there. So they could be working at any level in the workplace, okay? And you will find if there's a meeting or, you know, if there's a way that we're positioned in an office, if the black person gets together with another black person, there's, you know, there's an issue almost instantly that we don't want to be seen to be acting like I'm too black. So, you know, I'm going to go find another black person who's like me, and we're going to, you know, we're going to get together because we don't want the other races in the place to think that somehow we're clubbing together because of our blackness. So you get a separation of people depending on what their status is in the workplace. So if you're, for example, a black manager, you don't want to look too black by mixing with those workers that are a little bit lower. You see it all the time. That's the madness that goes on. Like, you can't just go talk to another black person and assume they're on the same level as you, because no, there's a whole heap of issues going on in their mind that you don't even know yet. So you start talking to another black person thinking, hey, that's a sister, and you get, or a brother, and you get, so you think I'm really that way? No, I'm not that way, you know. So it is, that's where it is. It's so deep, it's so endemic. And when we're talking about, you know, reprogramming, and I know people talk about that in sort of self-development, there's a whole leap of, you know, if we go to reprogramming with our communities, hey, it's going to take, I don't know, maybe another 50 years to see our people come out the other side and really see themselves for who they are. It's such a, it's so deep. The stuff within our communities is so deep.
And it would take 50 years if we got busy doing something conscious. We ain't about to do that. It's going to be another 300 years. The thing that we're not effectively handling and tackling is the psychological terrorism that has caused us to respond in this way toward each other when we're in those places. First of all, we were not, because of our depravity, being deprived of integration early on, of being actually not even integrated, but just free in the society, we tend to overreact to the positions and jobs and economics that we're able to gain, almost like we're sneaking under the radar, like nobody saw that I was a nigga. And so our overreaction to having what appears to be privilege drives the terrorism that has been placed in our hearts. And so I really think that's some of the issues we got to deal with.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how y'all deal over there in the UK. I really don't. I really don't. I talked to some sisters living up in Alaska, and I asked them the same thing. I said, how in the heck do y'all survive up there?
Well, the UK, we've been on a journey, okay. So I was born here. I was born in the UK and brought up here. So I went to school with white people here, and I totally get our journey in the sense that my parents came here from the Caribbean in the 50s and thought that they would, you know, when we were born, that our kids, their kids would go to school and somehow, you know, merge into the bigger community and get better jobs and have more opportunities. And what we did when we were going to school in the 60s, we were fighting for acceptance and fighting with those white kids, you know, for a space and for some sort of recognition or acknowledgement. And the fight continued right through to the 70s, right, you know, the 80s. Now we have what we have. I think what's happened is those children who fought in the 60s, and, you know, we had race riots in the 70s, you know, or 80s, we had race riots here. We managed to get something, scrap some bits from the system where we feel like we've got affluence to a certain degree. So there are a lot of black people who own their houses, a lot of people who own the car or whatever. But when we got to that level, that was our acceptance. You know, we felt, well, that's it, we've got that. Because when in the 50s and the 60s, when blacks first arrived in the UK, they had to club together. They had to do community to survive, right? My parents lived in a house, and it was like a bed that you owned, not a house. You had to start off in a bed. So black people who had a house, you know, would invite other black people from the Caribbean to get a bed in the same house. They then had things like we called a partner system, where they saved money together, and eventually each person got their own house and managed to own a house in this country. That's how they got their houses originally. So they did community because that was survival, right? Once they got to the level where they got their houses and a few of them got businesses, it stopped. Everybody started to become more self-centered. It became more about, you know, what else, you know, and now something I wasn't, which was a black suffering person who struggled. And people could move out to more affluent areas. And so, you know, the division has continued. And now you have black people who can say, actually, it's not even about being black. It is about, you know, what I have and what I can achieve in this country. So, you know, we've been bought off. We've been bought off, you know, by tokenisms, I guess, of what we want to call power. But no one owns an airline, and nobody owns a major corporation in this country or major business, so we own nothing. We really are nothing. But we want to say to ourselves that because I have a house, because I have a car, I am somebody.
You know what? That sounds like
the fight is the wrong fight. And
yeah,
our people, wherever we're at, refuse to think about that or understand it. We're fighting like a jackal that's competing to be a lion. Because what we fail to understand in all of these countries, even in the UK was not created by white people. The UK was created by niggas, straight up.
Yeah.
From the beginning, before the Romans got there. And there's a rich history of prehistoric blacks in Europe, throughout Europe, and pre-Empire UK people, before it became the UK, who were black. And even David McRitchie wrote a book, Ancient and Modern Britain. He was from the UK. And he gave you the list of the family names that were typically historically dark-skinned, woolly-haired people before the colonial powers rose as the imperial state. And so because we have people moving from the Caribbean to the UK, the storyline in school with history is that you were immigrants to the UK, just like in other places were immigrants to the Americas. And the reality is, no, you're not. Your ancestors were there before them crackers were there, but they don't tell you that part.
No.
So there's always a disconnect from the actual reality and history of the areas. And so because of that, we can't pull together a higher consciousness because we're still feeding off of the colonial powers.
Well, you know,
And one thing I know, too, about the British white folks is they are the world's most consummate liars. And if you want to be insulted by somebody, talk to a British person.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that blacks may have migrated to that area, you know, before it became the city-states that, and, of course, the nations that it is now. But once it became the city-states and once it became the nations and they set up laws, then any blacks that came after them laws were in place had a different classification. And that's what's
going on.
Right, and
that's my point, too, is the laws of these societies that are run by white supremacists are ingrained in the discrimination according to European culture. Their culture ingrains discrimination far different than black cultures. And so we're striving to integrate in places that have never accepted it. I was told once by someone from the UK that when you come to the UK or to Germany or anywhere in Europe, the blacks that come there are treated fairly well as visitors because the British see you as temporary guests, and they never consider you ever becoming British. So you're not a threat. So that's why they're not.
Right, and they got laws, which is not, you know, like our laws to become a United States citizen. Based on the 14th Amendment, all one needs to do is be born here, but it's not like that over there. But let me tell you something. In ethnic groups, you know, in Ghana, in the Ashanti region, Ashantis marry Ashantis.
Right.
In Nigeria, the Ibo marry Ibo. So you still have that type of segregation that goes on within all black societies, just like you find going on. You know, like the guy on the piece that Rob was playing, where they labeled him a white supremacist, the man said he just wanted to maintain his culture. And I would have supported him if I was there in that form. I would have said, this man is not no racist because he wants his daughter to marry somebody so when he look at the grandchild, he can see himself.
And I think it's two different issues that you're speaking of, Pianki.
Hold on. Let me ask a question, Pianki. So if he had said that he wanted to go ahead and keep it, keep his daughter from marrying somebody else, we'll go along with that. So, but if he wanted to go ahead and say his status in America does not matter, and him going ahead and doing business in America, you know, that he has to go, that you have to go ahead and deal with whites and deal with all white products and, you know, of that nature, I think that would make him a racist. If he was dealing with economics and finance, would that make him a racist?
Well, if he was trying to keep people for blacks from, and they don't do that no more like they used to. They do it in certain ways, and you have to be very astute to understand what's going on. But, if he's trying to keep you from attain access with that which would make you become, a better economic viability here in the United States, yeah, I would consider him as being a racist. But they can't – white folks are – white supremacy, white power is falling in the world, Rob. And I didn't see no white folks. I must have seen 6 white folks while I was over there in West Africa. I ain't never seen that least number in the period of time. They are beginning to diminish in the world. These Asians are coming on. They're taking these major projects. These Africans are shunning the whites and going with the Asians, and they find themselves on, begging to maintain what they have. In many cases, they are slipping. They're slipping very bad. You know, about a year, at the end of this century, there would be no white nations in the top 20 population centers in the world. No white nations will rank in the top 20 populations in the world.
But the problem with that, Pianki, it sounds good, but the mentality of white supremacy has permeated the whole population of the planet. And so now that Africans now come under Asian supremacy, it's still based on the same racialism.
Well, I think that people are smarter now than what they, Africans are a lot smarter about world affairs than black Americans are by a whole shot.
I don't know. I think it's different.
No,
I'll say some.
They're very much more astute about what's going on in the world and how to analyze the political ramifications of doing this and doing that than what we give.
I've never seen the evidence of that, but go ahead.
You should have visited that one conference that they had here where Africans from all over the world came and listening, sitting in on those meetings. But believe me, they are. But you see a difference, and things are changing. Nothing's going to stay the same, man. It's the way it is. In 2100, your top country is going to be India. China is going to move down to second population-wise. Nigeria is going to be third.
But there is a mass migration back to Africa now. I know so many people who are going back and putting their infrastructure and their skills back into Africa and are going home. Not just Africans who are born in Africa, but a lot of Caribbean people. I've got parts of my family have gone back to Ghana and are living in Ghana, have been living there for the past 20 years. Never born in Africa, born here in the UK, and have taken their families and are living in Ghana and doing very well. And I know a number of people who are planning to go this year to leave the UK and other parts of the world and just go back to Africa and put their resources there. So there is that going on as well, which I don't know if you guys are aware of so much. There's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of people who have given up on the UK and are just saying, this is an endless cycle. We can't do anything about changing anything here. There's no way that you can make the progress that you want to anyway.
Hello?
Because you're so shackled by all the racism and whatever. So people are going back to Africa. there is a migration going on.
Well, I think it's that in itself is good because Africa.
Niggas are scared of revolution. But niggas shouldn't be scared of revolution. Because revolution is nothing but change. And all niggas do is change. Niggas come in for murder and change into pimping clothes. Hit the streets to make some quick change. Niggas change their hair from black to red to blonde. And hope like hell their lips will change. Niggas kill other niggas just because one didn't receive the correct change. Niggas change from men to women, from women to men. Niggas change, change, change. You hear niggas say, things are changing, things are changing. Yeah, things are changing. Nigga things into black nigga things. Black nigga things that go through all kinds of changes. The change in the day that makes them rap and rave. Black power, and the change that comes over them at night as they sigh and moan. Life dies. Ooh, life dies. Niggas always going through bullshit change. But when it comes for real change, niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are actors. Niggas are actors. Niggas act like they're in a hurry to catch the first act of a great white hope. Niggas try to act like Malcolm. And when a white man doesn't react toward them like he did Malcolm, niggas want to act violently. Niggas act so cool and slick, causing white people to say, what makes you niggas act like that? Niggas act like you ain't never seen nobody act before. But when it comes to acting out revolution, niggas say, I can't give them action. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are very untogether people. Niggas talk about getting high and riding around in L. Niggas to get high and ride to hell. Niggas talk about pimping, pimping that, pimping what? Pimping yours, pimping mine. Just to be pimping is a hell of a line. Niggas are very untogether people. Niggas talk about your mind, talk about my mind stronger than yours. I got that bitch's mind upside. Niggas don't know a damn thing about your mind, but they be right. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas fuck. Niggas fuck, fuck, fuck. Niggas love the word fuck. They've been there so fucking cute. They fuck you around. The first thing they say when they're mad is fuck it. You play a little too much for them. They say fuck you. When it's time to TTB, niggas are somewhere fucking trying to be nice to them. They fuck over you. Niggas don't realize while they're doing all this fucking, they're getting fucked around. But when they do realize, it's too late. So niggas just get fucked up. Niggas talk about fucking, fucking that, fucking this. Fucking yours, fucking monsters, not knowing what they're fucking for. Ain't fucking for love and appreciation. Just fucking to be fucking. Niggas fuck white thighs, black thighs, yellow thighs, brown thighs. Niggas fuck ankles when they run out of thighs. Niggas fuck Charlie, Linda, and Sue. And if you don't mind out, niggas will fuck you. Niggas will fuck fuck if it could be fuck. But when it comes to fucking for revolutionary causes, niggas say fuck revolution. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are players. Niggas are players, are players. Niggas play football, baseball, and basketball while the white man is cutting off their balls. When a niggas play ain't tight enough to play with some black thighs, niggas play with white thighs to see if they still have some play left. And when ain't no white thighs to play with, niggas play with themselves. Niggas tell you they're ready to be liberated, but when you say, let's go take our liberation, niggas reply, I was just playing. Niggas are playing with revolution and losing. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas do a lot of shooting. Niggas do a lot of shooting. Niggas shoot off at the mouth. Niggas shoot blue. Niggas shoot traps. Niggas cut around the corners and shoot down the street. Niggas shoot sharp branches at white women. Niggas shoot dope into their arms. Niggas shoot guns and rifles on New Year's Eve. A New Year that is coming in. The white police would do more shooting at them. Where are niggas when the revolution needs some shots? Yeah, you know, niggas are somewhere shooting this shit. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are lovers. Niggas are lovers, are lovers. Niggas love to see Clark Gable make love to Marilyn Monroe. Niggas love to see Todd and fuck over NATO. Niggas love to hear an old ranger yell, high on silver. Niggas love commercials. Niggas love commercials. Oh, how niggas love commercials. You can take niggas out of the country, but you can't take the country out of niggas. Niggas are lovers, are lovers, are lovers. Niggas love to hear Malcolm rap, but they didn't love Malcolm. Niggas love everything but themselves. But I'm a lover too.
do. I love niggas, I love niggas, I love niggas, because niggas are me, and I should only love that which is me. I love to see niggas go through changes, love to see niggas act, love to see niggas make them plays and shoot the shit. But there's one thing about niggas I do not love. Niggas are scared of revolution.
Welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I had some problems here with this switchboard. It's like it froze, and I was trying to click off of it, and it, all this stuff I clicked just started going.
That's one of my favorite poems, Chef. I got the CD, didn't have it, met some of the last poets, love it.
Man, when I first heard that, man, I was like, wow, I kept playing it, and I played in my car, man. People was like, this motherfucker crazy, man. I was playing it so loud. I was riding around, man. Huh?
As long as you ain't insane. It says, as long as you ain't insane, you can be crazy.
Yeah, gas station, everything. Yeah, we're going to have to go ahead and end my show right here because I have some other issues with this thing here. So I want to go around and let everybody get their last words in. Empress, you want to go ahead and say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, it's about loving ourselves and, you know, and that takes a whole leap, you know, that takes a big shift in your consciousness, recognizing who we are and the quality that we can bring to ourselves. And I think sometimes, you know, if it can't happen where you are, then you need to go where your people are. And that's my plan, and you know, for the future, because sometimes, you know, you can't change, you can't make the changes you need where you are. But, you know, it's best to be where your people are. And that's my plan for the future. Definitely.
But I like that.
Yeah.
I like that plan. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Brother Pianki, you got something to say?
Well, you know, African people find themselves around the globe, but they're not utilizing global tribalism the way we see other tribes do, whether it's the Indians, especially the Asians, and, you know, other groups, the Jews and so on. That was a big mistake. They prefer to settle down where they were rather than to extract wealth from their locations where they exist in these different areas around the world. That global tribalism is a very, very important thing when it relates to back home being enriched and empowered from what you can extract from those global places where you exist. We've got to change our mentality. We got to do it quick because time's running short. As I said before, at some point in time, people are going to be studying what blacks was about back in 2012.
Interesting. Brother Kometu.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just say in closing that I appreciate you doing your show, and good to hear from Brother Pianki and Sister Empress. And more conversations like this need to happen because we were all three coming, all four coming from different places, but we were meeting in the middle of our own culture. So I appreciate that, and we need more of that. And
yep.
I think that if our consciousness of our actual past, not to get caught up in it, but to actually strategize with it and to take into account things we're not aware of, we would have that ethnic and group camaraderie and tribalism around the globe. I think the colonialism with its brainwashing techniques and the things that we hold on to and we value is the preventative thing of our unity. And if we knew more of our history before there were white people, before there were Asian people, we'd have the unity we need. So I just promote that we keep looking and digging deeper.
Yeah.
Thanks. All right, everybody. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, you guys.
Yeah, next time have some food and drinks.
Yeah.
You got a business with the food.
I have plenty of them for you. I'll let you know, man. You're gonna have to come check me out. I told you I got a cafe I'm running now, you know, so I'm not just bouncing around the places like I have been doing. So this is gonna be better.
Yeah.
Y'all come on up in and we can go from the cafe.
Okay.
All
right. Peace everybody, including you, sister, we'll get you a ticket.
Yeah, I need one. I need a ticket. Because I've seen that food on.
Why should the black man in America concern himself, since we've been away from the African continent for 400 years, 300 or 400 years? Why should we concern ourselves? What impact does what happened to them have upon us? Number one, first you have to realize that up until 1960, 1859, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers, and by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negatively. They projected Africa always in a negative light. Jungle, savages, cannibals, nothing civilized. And well, then naturally it was so negative until it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, and much less call us an African. And in hating Africa and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself. You can't hate Africa and not hate yourself. And you show me one of these people over here who have been thoroughly brainwashed, who has a negative attitude toward Africa, and I'll show you one that has a negative attitude toward himself. You can't have a negative attitude toward yourself, a positive attitude toward yourself, and a negative attitude toward Africa at the same time. To the same degree that your attitude, that your understanding of, and attitude toward Africa becomes positive, you'll find that your understanding of and your attitude toward yourself will also become positive. And this is what the white man knows. So they very skillfully made you and me hate our African identity, our African characteristics. And you know yourself that we have been a people who hated our African characteristics. We hated our hair. We hated the shape of our nose. We wanted one of those long, dog-like noses, you know. Yeah. We hated the color of our skin. Hated the blood of Africa that was in our veins. And in hating our features and our skin and our blood, why, we had to end up hating ourselves. And we hated ourselves. Our color became to us a chain. We felt that it was holding us back. Our color became to us like a prison, which we felt was keeping us confined, not letting us go this way or that way. And we felt that all of these restrictions were based solely upon our color, and the psychological reaction to that would have to be that as long as we felt imprisoned or chained or trapped by black skin, black features, and black blood, that skin and those features and that blood that was holding us back automatically had to become hateful to us. And it became hateful to us. It made us feel inferior. It made us feel inadequate. It made us feel helpless. And when we fell victim to this feeling of inadequacy or inferiority or helplessness, we turned to somebody else to show us the way. We didn't have confidence in another black man to show us the way, or black people to show us the way. In those days, we didn't. We didn't think a black man could do anything but play some horn, you know, some sound, and make you happy with some songs, and in that way. But when an inferior thing, where our food, clothing, and shelter was concerned, and our education was concerned, we turned to the man. We never thought in terms of bringing these things into existence for ourselves. We never thought in terms of doing things for ourselves, because we felt helpless. And what made us feel helpless was our hatred for ourselves. One of the things that made the black Muslim movement grow was its emphasis upon things African. This was the secret to the growth of the black Muslim movement. African blood, African origin, African culture, African ties. And you'd be surprised. We discovered that deep within the subconscious of the black man in this country, he's still more African than he is American. He thinks that he's more American than African because the man is jiving him and the man is brainwashing him every day, telling him, you're an American, you're an American. Man, how could you think you're an American and you have never had any kind of American treat over here? You have never, never. 10 men can be sitting at a table eating, you know, dining. And I can come and sit down where they're dining. They're dining. I got a plate in front of me, but nothing is on it. Because all of us sitting at the same table are all of us diners. I'm not a diner until you let me dine. Then I become a diner. Just being at the table with others who are dining doesn't make me a diner. And this is what you got to get in your head here in this country. Just because you're in this country doesn't make you an American. And no, you got to go farther than that before you can become an American. You've got to enjoy the fruits of Americanism. And you haven't enjoyed those fruits. You've enjoyed the thorns. You've enjoyed the thistle, but you have not enjoyed the fruits. No, sir. So I point these things out, brothers and sisters, so that you and I will know the importance in 1965 of being in complete unity with each other, harmony with each other, and not letting the man maneuver us in defining one another. I say that again that I'm not a racist. I don't believe in any form of segregation or anything like that. I'm for the brotherhood of everybody, but I don't believe in forcing brotherhood upon people who don't want it. As long as we practice brotherhood among ourselves, and then others who want to practice brotherhood with us, we practice it with them also, we're for that. But I don't think that we should run around trying to love somebody who doesn't love us. Thank you.
Introducing sexy Titania.